Smith Show.
Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind? You can email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. So, all day, it's been the Kavanaugh thing. You got to give Trump and the folks credit, though, trying as they may to distract and change the news cycle. Not sure they're going to get off of the Kavanaugh thing that easy. Sure, they released the documents, more tariffs. I'm still not going away. Sorry. Anyway, let's find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. and around the world. I've got Tom Scutari, Pentagon correspondent, Talk Media News. Tom, thanks for taking time for us.
Happy Monday. You're so right. The White House was flooding the news zone this afternoon with all sorts of stuff that all are newsworthy items, to be sure. But you're right. The Kavanaugh story is the story in D.C. and maybe elsewhere. I heard late today that they're going to have hearing now Monday.
Yep.
for both Kavanaugh and Ford, the woman who's his accuser. And so that's pushed the vote, the committee vote, away from Thursday. So we'll have a week now, that's 1 week from today, we'll have a week of frenzied speculation back and forth as to who said what, when, and all that, and I'm not trying to minimize either side. I mean, it's just I can see what kind of week this is going to be, probably.
No, it's going to be a really interesting week of watching the extremes play out. I just saw a statement, from Orrin Hatch that, just made me go, either you're just completely tone deaf, or this is what wealthy white privilege really looks like.
Yeah, I think you just raised a very interesting point, and it's one I was thinking about earlier, not in those terms, but the same universe. And here's why. Earlier in the confirmation process, Kavanaugh described where he grew up as sort of like dangerous, gun-ridden, violent shooting streets. He grew up like in Bethesda, Chevy Chase, Maryland. And people who live there sort of just scoffed at what he said. I mean, there's crime up there, of course, but it's not like this, some violent street in Chicago that's been getting a lot of attention because of shootings. It's basically an affluent, upper-class area that, in the whole scheme of things about safety in the street, it's a pretty safe area of the country, let alone the D.C. greater area, metropolitan area. So that alone sort of raised amusement about people at the very most. Why is he saying this to dramatize his background? He went to a private, an all-boys school, and Miss Ford, who is accusing him, went to an all-girls school, I think, Holton Arms. It's either a private school, an all-girl, a co-ed, or all-girls. And, this is a different part. This is a strain of Washington, D.C., that is upper class or privileged. Even though lower-income kids get to go to these schools, mostly it's not. It's mostly upper-income, connected families to get their kids in these schools.
Yeah, I mean, and then the important part is having the connections to be able to do this. It's one of the arguments that I make with various people who push the idea of, the golden ticket vouchers. Oh, you'll be able to send your kids to the very best school. Because, I had a state senator here on the program a while ago when they were pushing them here in PA. And I said, so if I get this golden ticket, I can send my kids to Germantown Academy or Abington Friends in Philadelphia. I can do that. He goes, absolutely. I go, you're going to tell me that this little golden ticket's going to be worth $45,000 a year, which is what it costs to go to kindergarten in these schools? And he said, absolutely. And it's either he didn't know his own piece of legislation or he was just completely, completely full of bull.
Yeah, well, it could be one of the two. But the fact is that's a different world than most people in Washington, D.C. even have, let alone most of the country. I saw it today, letters that were being signed in support of Ford from other females who attended that school over the years, okay? And saying, yep, this is the atmosphere of some of these parties we go to. This is sort of the attitude of the boys of that time period and before and after that. In other words, it goes to what you're referring to as sort of a privileged idea of how to behave. And I've heard, I've heard on good authority, as we say, you know, I have a daughter now who's in college, and she went to high school in the District of Columbia, a public school. And some of her, she went to other school, middle school, they go to private school and this and that. And some of her classmates from elementary school wound up going to private school and high school just because they wanted their kids to have that kind of education. Nothing wrong with that. I hear stories from those parents talking about behavior of some of the students in those schools. My daughter had gone to parties where there are students coming from these schools. She told me how the behavior is so different among boys and girls in those schools than it is with kids in public school, let's say.
Well, wouldn't it be safe to say those, Tom, wouldn't it be safe to say the kids that go to those schools come from families who very rarely ever tell the kids no, and that the kind of privilege that they have. I mean, I look at Trump is just the epitome of in a lifetime of no one ever telling him no, and and not ever there being anything that he can't have at a whim's notice.
Yeah, I think that that's a pretty good observation. And, you know, speaking of the Trump family, did you hear and see the note that Donald Trump Jr. wrote in mocking the accusation?
Yeah, see, there's somebody who I hope his parent, I hope his mother dropped him on his head a couple of times. And that would at least give him an excuse for being, well,
I mean, that was just amazing. Letter written in crayon and the whole thing. I was just stupefied when I saw that. I just can't believe anybody would be that insensitive.
But I think, again, to your point, that, you know, this is the world in which the privileged, this is the world that they live in, that, you know, this is okay to them, that, you know, I wasn't surprised seeing Dumb Junior do that. I was just going, I'm just shocked someone let him.
Well, maybe they didn't know about it, too, because I, you know, it goes back to what we were kind of saying earlier. The White House has done, you know, I'm pretty objective to these things. I thought they'd done a pretty good job of not raising the rhetoric on this accusation. You know, even President Trump, and I'm paraphrasing him, he said, look, you know, I think, you know, Kavanaugh's a great guy and all that. This woman needs to be, you know, have her time to be heard. It might take a little bit longer, but we need to do it. We'll do it right. For him, that's remarkable restraint, okay? And Kellyanne Conway said something similar to say the woman has a right to be heard.
Oh, no, so she also went a step further and said that, well, she has to be under oath.
That's fine, but still, I mean, that's compared to what they were doing before.
Right.
I mean, I'm just putting it in perspective. They realize, here's what, I think they get what a hot potato this is, okay? So in talking about what Don Jr. did, that must have just, you know, blew their corks, because here they are, the point I was trying to make is here they are trying at least to be calm in the face of, you know, that President Trump probably wants to let it rip. So they're holding it together pretty well, and then Donald Trump Jr. writes this silly, horrible thing.
Yeah, he must not have got the memo saying we're going to try and do it right this time.
Yeah, he probably missed that memo.
Because my question, you know, and I've asked this already, you know, the question is, you know, come November, you know, how this plays out, is it possible that you could see the woman vote going 70-75% towards Democrats? Could you see that kind of a massive split given what we've seen from the grabber by the you-know-what president who's appointed this guy, nominated this guy to be on the court, and all of the scandal and all of the stuff? Is it possible that women could go, well, you know what, the party has left us?
I don't think it would be that high of a vote, but I do believe that's one of the reasons why the White House is taking this as gingerly as possible, because they understand the potential for what you say, a large defection of women voters or solidifying of women voters, behind Democratic candidates. There already are, I believe, a record number of women running for various offices
right. This
November already. So that'll, in a sense, drive out some female supporters, you would think. Coupled with this, so close to the election and how those hearings go. And, you know, what we're not talking about, but will be realistic, because we don't know what's going to be said on Monday and the reaction to it. However, that will be, you know, then they'll have to vote or not vote. They're either going to vote on him in committee, or he's going to withdraw, or they're going to vote him down. I mean, these are the options. There are not many choices. And that's not going to end. Look, next week is the last week of September, I believe, or close to the end of September. You're going to be in October already, 1 month before the election. The vote has to come before the election, sooner rather than later, if they're going to have. They're not going to want to vote on this a week before the election. You know that.
Right.
So I just think that, you know, the timing of all of this will have an impact on the election because it is so close. It's not like this was a year ago and then you had a year to have other things consume you. You're on a 6 week, if I'm doing my calendar right, 6 to 8 weeks before, 50 days before the election. 50 days before the election. That's pretty, you know, that's less than 2 months. So that's a pretty fast track. All the primaries are over now. You have two candidates or three, depending on the race. They're all squaring up against each other now and taking sight on each other. So it's going to have an impact in some way. And I think the impact will be to drive women and voters against Trump to the polls. However, I still, you know, I'm in the minority in this. I think this kind of stuff solidifies some of the vote for Trump even more because people who like him are going to say, well, we're not going to let these guys do this to us. So there's going to be some hardening of Trump supporters as well. I believe you're correct, however, that the larger shift or the larger impact will be for those who vote against Republicans.
Yeah, I got to tell you, though, I think the white male vote is already solidified. A good portion of the white male vote is already solidified. So you're not changing anything there. For me, it's looking at the women's votes. Which way do they swing? Do you see this move? Because if I were running a campaign, I would Orrin Hatch would be my guy. You know, I would be looking at him because he was asked the question, if it turns out that the allegations were true, you know, what do you say? And he replied with, well, if they were true, I think it would be hard for senators not to consider who he is today. And I'm going, wait a second. Yeah. That is the epitome of wealthy white privilege, and I would be running on that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not running for re-election, of course.
No, of course not. But, I mean, you know, when I was playing football, you know, the coaches would always put up something the other coach or another team said about us to get you all fired up. That's one of those moments right there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have to accept the fact that this city is full of hypocrisy now.
Sure.
Looking back at someone else's record all the way back is okay if you don't like that person or you oppose that person. But if you support that person, looking all the way back and then saying, well, they're a different person now, that's okay.
Yeah, does it make it right?
No. Does it make it right to be hypocritical? No. I mean, this is way off target. But I remember when I was a reporter in Bosnia and covering the conflict there, and the Bosnian Serbs were always getting written up about the atrocities they're allegedly committing. And I remember in a village one time, and some of these Serb paramilitaries were talking to us reporters, and they said, how come you guys always write about us? You know, the Croats and the Muslims do the same thing. And I said, oh yeah, but that doesn't, just because someone else is doing it doesn't make it right to do.
Right.
You know, you're still doing it. It's like three guys going to rob a grocery store, and they're running out the door, and then one of them trips and gets caught. The other two, you know, get away, and the guy gets caught says, wait a minute, those two guys robbed as well. Yeah, but you got caught.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Let's move on. Let's move from this. Fortunately, the storm wasn't as bad as I think was predicted. Still horrible. I think the last report I saw, 20 people dead. How do you think this is going to play out over the next several days as now the hard work of cleaning up comes up?
Yeah, let me tell you the good news about this is the Pentagon has been briefing us like round the clock many times. They were on this. They were pretty well organized to do what they could to help with high water vehicles. They had two ships following the storm in, the Kearsarge and I think the Arlington, with amphibious units that go behind the storm. In other words, once Florence hit the ground and coast and moved in, they followed it in that way. So they were trying to attack with help from all ways possible. And they had generators and all sorts of good stuff. So they really were prepared to help. I think the states were also prepared. You know, obviously it's a big difference between Puerto Rico and the mainland because you could send trucks from Pennsylvania and Ohio and other places to go help restore power where you can't just drive them into an island. This is not justifying the White House's action on Puerto Rico, but it is a reality that you could drive from Indiana or Wyoming if you had to help out.
And they were both Trump states, so I think that helps.
Yeah, that helps also. But you're right, the storm petered out a little bit with the wind, which was very, very helpful. So you have a lot of water damage. Now, I think, you know, weather is an always interesting factor in election. If the perception is the government let us down, I'm speaking if I'm from North or South Carolina, some close races, that can make a difference. You know, in Chicago when it snowed, they didn't clear the streets. So that had an impact on the race. And that happens a lot, weather issues. I don't think so. I think that this one may have a small impact if it goes bad. It doesn't look like it's going that bad. You know, you can hear reports of people in Wilmington, North Carolina, they're cut off because of flooding and there's no electricity, so ATMs aren't working and charge cards aren't working. There's all these kind of real problems that, you know, the government can help to a certain extent. They set up food banks for people who have cars to get to them. At some point, you can't blame the government because of the destruction.
Sure.
So I think that this week is okay. I think if it lingers, this goes back to the clock that we were talking about on the last issue. You're only 6 weeks away from the election. So if things move forward in the next 2 or 3 weeks, I think the impact will be minimal. If it lingers for 6 weeks, you know, close to the election, I think that it could have an impact on some races. But there's not that many congressional seats in those two states that are being contested. In other words, that aren't favoring one candidate, an incumbent already.
Right.
So how much of an impact it would have on the overall numbers, it's hard to see at this point. Nevertheless, you know, Rick, this is crazy years of politics these last couple of years. And so everything that you can kind of look at as predictors aren't necessarily stable predictors.
No, it's remarkable how things have shifted over the years.
Yeah.
And finally, James Mattis evidently is going to Macedonia. Why is he going there?
He's actually back. He's back today. He went on Sunday. Talk about a brutal trip. He flew over Sunday. He's back on Monday, today. Macedonia is trying to get into NATO, and they're going to be invited once they work out this name thing with Greece, which is a whole separate little story. But the Russians are trying to interfere in the vote in Macedonia to vote for the name change, just like the Russians tried to have a coup in Montenegro last year when Montenegro was going to vote about joining NATO. Russia doesn't like any more members of NATO. They see the Balkans as their backyard. Mattis is amazingly well-respected around the world in these countries, went over there to show support and to talk tough about the Russians, which helps a lot. He's back today. Tomorrow's Tuesday. He's in town tomorrow, and I think he's leaving again on another trip on Wednesday. He's traveling a lot. You know, the stories are now increasing about how Trump doesn't like him anymore and that he'll try to get rid of him after the election. That remains to be seen. But until that happens, you know, Mattis is doing what he does pretty well, which is going and reassuring allies as well as the opponents about the sincerity of U.S. efforts to work together.
Or at least our militaries.
Military to military, yeah, which is important. He likes to point out that the Chinese and the United States militaries, if they can have a dialogue, that could offset a little bit the political and economic tensions between the two countries.
Sure.
There's what they call a deconfliction line in Syria where the Russians and the Americans speak to each other, the military folks, so they know whose planes are in the air at what time, so that it helps to avoid accidental conflicts or dogfights. And it's worked so far there. So, you know, there is a value to military discussions, and that's his thing, and he does it pretty well. But he's going to be traveling, I think, almost every week in October. And so, you know, in other words, between now and the election, he's going to be out of the country for the most part.
Yeah, talking is extremely important. Even during the height of the Cold War, we had the bat phone. You were still talking, and when that breaks down, that's when you really start to worry.
Yeah,
you're spot on. Tom, I appreciate the thoughts, the time. Good stuff.
All right. I'll talk to you later, Rick. Have a good one.
Thanks so much, Tom Squitieri, Pentagon correspondent there with Talk Media News. Good guy. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.